when you walk into the ring with the number one heavyweight of the world, you'll be ready, won't you? Why? Because I waited for 50 years to make you ready. You'll be able to spit nails, kid. Like the guy says, you're gonna eat lightning and you're gonna crap thunder. You're gonna become a very dangerous person.
Show's name pays tribute to the Boer Truckers of South Africa, who in 1838 soundly defeated 30,000 Zulus on the bank of the Nkomo River, thereafter
Eddie,
called
the
Blood River,
started.
From the water turning red with the blood of the slain. Miraculously, no Boer Trucker died and only three were wounded.
Thank you so much.
Now, your friend, Eddie Miller, will be your ambassador for tonight's show.
In a few minutes, have a little difficulty reaching him. But right now, we're going right back to Sister Monica Braveheart. And she's going to I think she wants to read this letter, part of a letter she's got from Leslie Borey. Plus, we got to talk about some other stuff that went on in the second hour. But anyway, go ahead, Sister Braveheart. Take off on that letter if you're ready to go.
Okay, Eddie, I'm just going to read part of the first page of this 8 pages of letter from Leslie Borey, because he really spells it out very, very well what's going on. And I'm going to preface this with a few words to that hate crimes unit and tell them that, no, we are just pointing out the hatred that this group of people have towards us. So just to make it very clear, because they're going to be looking for, you know, any excuse to where, oh, Monica Schaefer is spewing hatred. And this is pretty strong stuff. I also want to make clear, I'm reading a letter from a man who, he's also not the hater, but he's being accused of hatred because he's trying to warn the people about this. So here I go. I'm going to read this letter from Leslie Borey. Dear Monica, as you know, I am writing to you from a supermax jail in Milton, Ontario, Canada. My bail review, as Alfred used to say, was a Muppet show, and I will be here for who knows how long. On August 22nd at 9:30 a.m., I will have a video hearing at 7 a.m. to try to get a trial date on what may be the most important case in Canadian history at the most dangerous time for Canada's survival as an independent Western nation. I am the political leader of the movement to emancipate Canada from 1% Soferim 15 Talmudic Zionist communist rule that wants to subject Canadians to the complete control of a one-world Talmudic Zionist-led government that will exterminate and enslave the Goyim the way that they always do when they get into positions of power that are backed with murderous violence, like in Jewish Bolshevik Russia and the Ukraine, also in Bela Kun's Hungary, and in 1956 Hungary, as well as Rosa Luxemburg's Germany. My trial will expose government corruption that is broad in scope and who its Soferim 15 Semitic communist influencers are. So it is no surprise that the Semitic Crown prosecutors who represent the Crown Temple, I am told, suggested a publication ban on my trial to protect the guilty. That does not include me, who is the accused in this case. So they want a publication ban, of course, so that the public doesn't hear this trial. Isn't that interesting? I'll continue with the letter. I was arrested for exposing Jewish hatred of Canadians, so naturally I was charged with incitement of hatred against the people who say that, quote, even the best of the Goyim must be killed, end of quote, and that is in the verse Soferim 15 from the Talmud. So again, it's Monica speaking to the hate crimes unit. This is Leslie Borey's letter, and he's simply pointing out what's in the Talmud, and that is the Jewish holy book. That's what they want to do to the Goyim. And what are the Goyim, in case you don't know? That's the non-Jews, the rest of us, the cattle. In their view, we are just merely cattle. Going on with Leslie's letter. The threatening charges are total garbage and were used as an excuse to detain me indefinitely to stop me from telling Canadians some simple truths that hollow hoaxers don't want known. My large ammo collection has also been used as an excuse to detain me. I don't expect a fair trial in a court where all of the jurists have been appointed by a murderous, corrupt, Semitic-led government. My situation is a window into the future for Canadians. Hate laws like Bill C-36 will confiscate the firearms from people without reason and without revealing the Semitic accusers to Canadians. There you go, just like my accuser is anonymous. Okay, going on with his letter. The writing is not only on the wall, it is on our foreheads. Conservatives with bills like C-250 and Ontario 168, and conservatives working with Chabad Lubavitch in Alberta, who made a video to explain adopting the IHRA Jewish definition of anti-Semitism, will prevent Canadians from saying things and not just agreeing with one Holocaust myth. Okay, I'm going to finish there and hand it back to you. And then after this, I think Gene has been connected there, and I'm going to bow out after this first quarter, Eddie. But that was a letter from Leslie Borey, part of a letter from him. He's saying it as it is. Who is actually the haters here? And this just on the heels of, you know, me being accused of hate and Leslie in jail for also being accused of hate. That's how it is. So those who are doing the hating, they don't like it when we point out what they are doing and they call us the haters. Okay, over to you.
You know, like we said, we have the bitter ender on. So before going further, I'd like to just welcome the Gene, the old bitter ender. How you doing tonight, bitter ender?
Oh, doing fine. I liked your intro, your musical introduction there with the Rocky theme. So I'm telling you, Rocky, stay away from Creed. He's going to hit you point minute, I'm telling you.
He'll put your lights out.
Yeah. I was going to ask Monica. I'd read her post online about how the VOPO, and that wasn't that the East German secret police? The VOPO had paid her a visit and were grilling her about, you know, all these concocted hate crimes that they... But she's made an excellent point. The haters are the people that accuse us or anybody that questions them of being the haters. It's like the biggest racist in this country are the blacks that accuse whites of racism. And they're the worst racists around. So it's always the people that are the worst perpetrators of hatred or racism or anti-Semitism. They're the ones that are the most hateful types of people. So it's a crazy, mixed up, upside down world.
That's exactly it. It's everything reversed. Everything
absolutely
reversed.
Absolutely. Are they going to try to throw any charges against you, Monica, or were they just visiting and trying to threaten
to follow up on a complaint, you see. So they had a complaint from an anonymous, I'm sure he was a serial complainer, because we have a few of those in Canada. And
they're probably
and
Americans
else
that snuck across the border, but go ahead, no.
Yeah, no, and the complainant can stay anonymous, nice and safe, so they can be serial complainants, you know, so that we can't really even point that out, that, look, this person is just a troublemaker, and that's his job, basically, is to go around looking for, you know, quote-unquote haters, actually just people who are telling the truth about them, right?
Absolutely.
Anyway, so they just wanted to follow up on that. They said they could have given me a phone call, but they wanted to come and pay me a visit to... just have a talk. That's all we did. Just had a talk.
Mm-hmm. And so now they've got you on file, and, you know, so they know where to go to look for you now. And hopefully that's all they'll ever do is talk and won't do anything else. But who knows? It's gotten so bad in this country as well. So anyway, that's that's the mess we're living in. Well, good luck to you. I hope you don't have
Thank
any more
you.
Visits for talks or anything like that.
So. Yeah.
Are they giving you? If they say they were going to be coming back, Monica, did they hit around about that?
No, but they just wanted to inform me of the laws and this and that. You know, we have a new law in Canada. I told you about that, and so I'm just going to carry on. I mean, I told them, like, whether I die in chains or I die out here under the big blue sky, I'm going to be a free woman, either way, right? And it just because there's this blots of toner on paper doesn't mean I suddenly change my mind about history and what really happened. And I have a God-given right to think freely and to speak freely, and I will just exercise my God-given right to do those things. That's it. So I'm going to carry on, and I'm not even going to think about it. We don't even need to give them any more power by belaboring it and, oh, what if this and what if that. I'm not even going to give it that energy. That's it. So that's topic is finished as far as I'm concerned.
Well, no, but it's like what we talked about last week, that they use the force of the government and the threats of the government and send in the VOPO out to check on you, to threaten people to perpetrate a lie and to threaten people not to question a lie. And so by doing this, they're just proving the case of people that are trying to tell the truth about this, because their lie has to be backed up with threats by the government. So that
you're exactly right.
Exact proof that it is a lie. You don't need anything else. You don't have to have facts about what people said or didn't say in the 1940s, or what this happened, or who did samples of dirt and for scientific evidence that there weren't any gas chambers and things like that. By the government,
you're exactly right.
By the government telling you that you can't even say anything, you know they're dependent on a lie.
Got that right. Well,
yes.
This year's the music, Gene. We'll be right back to you right after this quick break. Be right back, folks.
Blood River Radio is the only news media in the United States whose sole purpose of being is to fight against the ever-rising tide of global white genocide, both soft and hard genocide, whether it is in the form of ethnic cleansing via the current massive invasion of non-white, non-Christian hordes that are overwhelming the once all-white nations of Western Europe, the United Kingdom, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and the United States, or via the hard genocide in South Africa, where the rape, murder, and torture of whites is an ongoing daily occurrence. Though we are a Christian brotherhood, we will cooperate with other groups in our operations if it will shorten our people's casualty list. We further pledge to you to leave the radio studio at every opportunity and take it to our churches, to our universities, and most importantly, we promise to occupy the streets. However, none of our mission can succeed without funding. Please help us all that you can and donate to our cause by going to www.bloodriverradio.com.
Hello, friends. This is Jacob from Blood River Radio. We call the kings into account and tell the truth to shame the devil on this show every week because we are of the firm conviction that our cause cannot succeed without true revival amongst the remnant, amongst that principled minority of the dispossessed majority. Now is the time to stand and be counted, to do like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who would not bow down to the false idols of their day, even under pain of death. Like the 300 mighty men of valor who surrounded the Midianites with Gideon, or the 7,000 men that God told the prophet Elijah had not bowed their knees to Baal in a time when even calling fire down from heaven would not awaken our kinsmen from their slumber. If you are encouraged by our labors in the trenches for the kingdom and the cause of truth, liberty, and righteousness, I urge you to consider supporting this program. No donation is too small. We can do with thousands or even hundreds what our enemies and the powers and the principalities of this present darkness need tens of millions to do. So please donate today at BloodRiverRadio.com and help us take up the hedge and stand in the gap against the great evils of our time.
Being this is a .44 Magnum, the most powerful handgun in the world, and would blow your head clean off, you've got to ask yourself one question. Do I feel lucky? Well, do you, Bunk?
Blood River Radio family. We're right back. Sister Monica, well, she dropped a load on us starting in the second hour about the Gestapo, the VOPO, as the bitter ender said, and she's gone, and I can see her point. She said that she did not want to belabor what they did. She did not want to give them any more ink, any more energy. I'll tell you what, Monica is a tough cookie. She's not afraid of them, and she wants them to know that she's not afraid of them. So anyway, I'm sure that the Bitter Ender heard all that, and Bitter Ender,
oh, yeah,
to you.
No, she's great. Monica is the Joan of Arc of our century. So we'll not back down and just stands up to them and shows. She shows what lying dogs these people in the government are, and our government, Canadian government, they all controlled right out of Tel Aviv. You know, that's who's pulling the strings, and who's making these politicians jump and dance for them. It's really disgusting. That's why I lost a lot of respect for Ron DeSantis. I thought he'd done a great job as governor down there and taking on these hurricanes and things like that. But then he goes running over to Israel and signs this anti-Semitic law. So if you criticize, same thing that's going on in Germany and going on in Canada and a lot of these countries in Europe. If you even criticize these people for what they're doing and throwing people in jail for just questioning information, then they can declare that anti-Semitic, and now we've got a governor in a state in the United States that signed all this nonsense, went running over there and bowing down to the Israelis and signed this thing out. I wouldn't vote for somebody for president that's doing that. His main responsibility as president is the United States, and he's not to be bowing down to Israel or Guatemala or the Fiji Islands or any other country. His number one responsibility is to the United States. And if he's doing that, that shows his number one concern is not the United States, but it's somebody else. And he doesn't need to be president, as far as I'm concerned. So anyway, at least he's not senile and drooling on himself and stumbling all over the stage and falling up the steps to Air Force One and all of that. I mean, we've got choices, bad or worse. You know, that's about all we have. And one of the only decent people, they're going to try to throw him in jail to keep him from running. So, golly, this country's a disaster. But anyway, we had talked last week about a program we had at our Sons of Confederate Veterans camp.
Oh, yes, yes, Scott, that's right.
Scott Salley has given us two programs on the greatest president in American history, dishonest Abraham Lincoln. And this last one, his title was Lincoln's War About Slavery. And he debunks all of this nonsense that we keep getting beaten over the head with here in the South, that all we did, that we had 900,000 Southern white boys fought in the most brutal war in the Western Hemisphere, suffered these crippling, horrific wounds, and went back in the military to be wounded a second and third time, had to subsist on a handful of rations that would barely keep a bird alive, and march barefoot through the ice and snow. And they claim that the only reason they did that was to keep a bunch of simple-minded darkies around to pick some rich man's cotton and pour his mint juleps. And if that's not one of the most ridiculous accusations that I've ever heard of in my life. And I've been in a lot of debates with these people, and I always throw this back in their face. And I said, well, have you ever spent one day under fire in combat? And they go, I said, if you had, you wouldn't make a foolish statement like that, because that just defies logic.
I got that right.
And then Scott went on to give all of this. Well, it you have to understand who's trying to destroy our history. It's the communists and the Tel Aviv people, because that's the way they take over a country. You destroy the history of a country, and everything in that country was bad. You have to get rid of it. And that's what the communists are doing. It's their slavery excuse to change the name of these military bases, like Fort Hood, Fort Benning, Fort Bragg, and then tear down our monuments, because we had examples of sterling leadership of real men that led out in the field, that commanded armies for the South. And they served in the United States Army first. All of those bases were named, well, most all of them were named after individuals in the South that served in the U.S. Army in the war with Mexico. And then when Lincoln declared war on the South and sent an army to invade the South, their loyalty was to their native state. And they resigned from the United States Army and went with their state army. And they always throw out this nonsense about, well, Lee was a traitor. Lee was a traitor. Well, they don't know anything about military protocol. When you're an officer, you can turn in your letter of resignation, and your service with that government and that military is over. All you do is turn in your letter of resignation. That's it. So he resigned from the United States Army, went back to Virginia, and was then part of the Army of Virginia, which was later incorporated into the Confederate States Army. So these people that are always yapping on CNN and all these other nutcases, saying, well, Lee and these others, so they were traitors. They were in the U.S. Army. Now, if they'd stayed in the U.S. Army and were wearing a blue uniform and were blowing up bridges and cutting telegraph lines and killing U.S. soldiers while they were still in the U.S. Army, yes, that would be a traitor. But once an officer turns in that letter of resignation, it's over. That's it. And so he wasn't in the U.S. Army anymore. So how could he be a traitor? But anyway, that's just a side point. Scott was talking about one thing that
that's a great
Lincoln,
side point.
President of the United States, and Jefferson Davis, President of the Confederacy, said, both of them said the war was not about slavery. And Lincoln said that it wasn't about slavery. His goal was to preserve the empire, the dictatorship, preserve the Union. And mainly it was to preserve the money that was coming in from the South, because the South was taxed on imports and agricultural products. So in 1860, the United States budget was $102 million. Now, we laugh at that today. They blow that off just at lunchtime in Washington.
Sure do.
But that was a lot of money back then. And the South, because of tariffs and taxes, was paying about $83 million of that $102 million. So when the South left, there went the golden calf that was paying all the bills. So Lincoln said he could not allow the Southern states to leave. The United States government would go bankrupt because they had put high tariffs on the Southern states and forced them to buy their products from factories in the Northeast. And it was we were getting a lot better things being brought into the South from England and France and Europe. The high tariffs were forcing us to have to buy it. And Lincoln actually said when he was in Congress as a representative from Illinois, he said, any people anywhere have the right to throw off their existing form of government and form a new one that suits them better. This is a most sacred and most inalienable right. And that's from Abraham Lincoln. But between the time he was in Congress and when he became supreme dictator over the United States, my thought is that he'd been listening to the Eagles, Hotel California.
Yes.
Where it says in there, you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. I think Lincoln was probably an Eagles fan listening to that. So anyway, that's just the hypocrisy that we have to live under today. And like I said, the communist insurrectionists in this country, the communist media that we have, they always throw that slavery nonsense in our face, and even Lincoln said it wasn't. In fact, he actually said the seven states that had seceded, the first ones that left, they could stay out of the Union, they could keep their slaves, if they would pay their taxes to the United States. Yep.
So that hadn't changed.
No. All they want is the money. Gouge the South for their money. Yeah. And you know, sucker these Southern boys to join their military and lay our life on the line for them, and then, you know, get slapped in the face if we don't get killed first. So I don't know, Eddie. It's pretty sickening what they've done and what they keep.
It gets harder and harder for me to cope. Every day it gets harder for me to cope what's going on. You know, James is listening to our program. He's listening to you, Gene, and he said that here's another point. He said to make to you. He said back in the 1860s, and this is great. I didn't think about this. Back in the 1860s, towns were usually populated by the same family or a few families. It's not like that today where people move all over the place. Back then, to declare war on your state meant to declare war on your very flesh and blood and family members. And that's a one hell of a point. In fact, we'll talk about that as soon as we come back from this break, folks. Be right back.
Exposing corruption, informing citizens, pursuing liberty. You're listening to Liberty News Radio.
USA News, I'm Tim Berg. President Biden spent the first part of his Labor Day weekend in Florida touring the damage left behind by Hurricane Idalia. The president taking an aerial tour followed by a briefing on the ground and a tour of Live Oak, which is in the process of recovery. Speaking to reporters, the president says he's inspired by the sense of community he saw.
The spirit of this community is remarkable. When people are in real trouble, the most important thing you can give them is hope. There's no hope like your neighbor walking across the street and see what they can do for you, or the local pastor or someone coming in and offering you help.
After being criticized by Republicans for not taking his job seriously, Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says he's keeping a close eye on travel over this long holiday weekend.
Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says he's hoping travel this Labor Day weekend goes as smooth as possible.
Like millions of Americans, I'm traveling this busy Labor Day weekend to be with family.
He speaks with reporters at O'Hare International Airport in Chicago.
And I know so many Americans are hitting the road or heading to airports to do the same.
I'm Laura Winters.
Former New Mexico Governor Bill Richardson is dead at the age of 75. A statement from the Richardson Center for Global Engagement said Richardson died in his sleep Friday night at his home. Richardson was a candidate for president in the 2008 Democratic primary and later served as Energy Secretary and UN Ambassador during the Clinton administration. Legendary musician Jimmy Buffett has passed away. The singer-songwriter was best known for his 1977 hit Margaritaville, which was inducted into the Library of Congress National Recording Registry in 2023. This is USA News.
Hey there, this is Brant along with Sherry.
Hi. And
maybe you've heard about MediShare. Maybe you heard me talking about it. Well, Sherry helps produce these spots about MediShare. So people ask us, does this actually work? Is this really a great option for my health care? And honestly, the answer is yes.
Yes, yes,
it is. For real, yes.
And you know what? It's funny, too, because a lot of people are fed up with their current arrangement or they're looking to save money, but they're hesitant, right? I'm like, MediShare has been doing this for 30
right.
years. I think you can trust that,
you
right?
You can't. MediShare really is the gold standard for this health care sharing thing, too. And I've done it. You've done it. And people are really happy after they make the switch. I keep talking about the member satisfaction rate. It's real. It's like double that of health insurance.
I have loved it. They're professional and they care. That in and of itself is refreshing.
We could change your name to MediSherry.
That's cool. That's interesting.
Cool marketing thing.
Sure.
It's not going to happen. You can save a ton if you're really happy with it. They're great to talk to. Call them now. They really are. Just call this number. 833-34-BIBLE. That's 833-34-BIBLE. 833-34-BIBLE.
Blood River Radio family, it is so great to have a mixed crew. I know, and I'm not blowing hot air. We have some of the greatest people in the world. It's so dedicated. You know, Sister Nancy is in her 80s, and she's been going through. She's been into. They had a tornado up there where she lives. We've talked about the hurricanes down there in Florida, and God bless Biscuit. Biscuit didn't get hit as hard, which is kind of amazing. We were praying our guts out for him. He didn't get hit near as hard as a Jay, but we have a great crew. We feel like family. Sister Nancy and I bonded instantly. I got her hold of her out of the it was the old American Freedom News. I said, man, she's a hell of a writer. We invited her on. She came out. Of course, we met Gene a long time ago, League of the South, rode to Charlottesville with him. And Sister Nancy, I met her through Sister Monica through Paul Fromm. But it's just like God himself has been in this this thing. But listen, I was going to make one more point that James texted in, and then we'll go right back to the bitter ender. And Robert E. Lee himself pretty much echoed, verbiage what James said when he was offered the command of the Union Army. You know, he was offered command of the whole shebang, of the supreme commander. If I'm not, Gene knows more about that than I do.
Yes, you're right.
But he turned it down. He said, sir, I'm looking across the river. He said, I can see my home. He's looking over to Virginia. He said, I can see my home. I can't fight against my state. I'd be fighting against my mother, my father, my brothers, sisters, my aunts, my uncles, my cousins. I can't do that. You know, it's not like it. And Jay's making a great point. Now we have this homogenized mongoloid population. You know, I saw them just today in my running group. We have a huge group of people. I'm speaking to them, telling them where the water stops were. They couldn't even understand what the hell I was talking about. They didn't know what the hell I was saying was that water. Anyway, I just thought I'd make that point there, Gene, and go right back to you,
brother.
No,
you're absolutely, and James is too, was absolutely right. They offered Lee the command not just to the federal army that was going to invade Virginia, but the command of all the United States military. That meant every Yankee soldier from Maine all the way out to California. And this would have been the pinnacle of a military officer's career, to be promoted up from colonel. He was a colonel at that time, the U.S. Army, to commanding general of all the United States troops. But just like James pointed out, and you were saying, Eddie, he said, I can't do that. I can't fight against my family. And, you know, he would have to fight against his sons and the people that he knew and had grown up with and lived with in Virginia, and he just couldn't do that. And so that was an example of the character of people we had back then. Today, our politicians and these clowns that they trot out and from the Defense Department today, they would fight against their own mother if it meant a promotion.
Yes.
And, you know, they wouldn't care. They'd go back and burn their hometown down if they were declared as, you know, if their hometown had people at a parents' meeting at a school board that were declared as domestic terrorists. They'd go back and wipe them all out just to get that promotion.
Yes.
So that's such a contrast in the character of the leadership we had in the 1800s in the South, and the leadership, so-called leadership, and I use that in quotes, leadership that we have in this country today. Here's another thing that when we were going back to our slavery subject, you know, the South offered to end slavery before
yes,
the
it is.
13th Amendment, before the war, first shot was fired in the war, before Lincoln's emancipation, before even Lincoln was elected. The lunatics in the North, these abolitionists, were so crazy, and they were, the abolitionists really didn't care that much about the blacks. What they were, they hated Southerners. They hated the lifestyle that we had, the agricultural life, and they jumped on the abolitionist bandwagon just to try to hurt the South economically. But the South offered to end slavery before the war. They said, well, okay, you want to get rid of slavery? Then do what the British did. Pay the British colonists for the money they have invested in their slaves, and we'll abolish it. And they can work as sharecroppers, or they can work for wages, because slaves were very, very valuable property. And the difference between the North and South was the South was an agricultural region. They had some manufacturing, but nothing like what they had in the North, because the land up North is not suited for farming or on large cash crops. They can subsist and get just enough to keep the family alive, but not the huge agricultural acreage that they had in the South. So they were all manufacturing. And in the South, or anywhere that you're an agricultural region, you're always borrowing against next year's crop. You can't go out and plant corn and have it come in next week and then go sell that little corn crop and then plant another one in 2 weeks, you go sell it. Like, you can manufacture stuff at a factory and you make this thing and sell it in a week's time, and then you make more and sell it in a week's time. So if you're agricultural, you're always borrowing against next year's crop. And you've got to wait till the harvest comes in. And if you get too much, if you don't get enough rain, it dries up. Or you get too much rain, it washes the seed out of the ground, you're sunk. So they were always having to go to the bank, these plantation owners, and borrow against next year's crop. So you go to the bank and they say, okay, what have you got for collateral? Well, I've got a farm. I get a big farm, so many acres. And the banker says, no, I don't want a farm. That's why I'm working at a bank. That's, farming's too hard work. So, okay, well, I got a big house. Well, I got a big house. Why do I need another one? Well, what else have you got for collateral? Well, I've got X number of slaves. So if you couldn't pay your note, you could sell off part of your slaves or reduce the debt that you owed on your loan. And that's why they weren't going to give up their slaves for free, because they were collateral against borrowing against your crop next year. So that's one thing they never understood in the North. So of course, the North didn't want to, the government didn't want to pay the slave owners. They just wanted them at 8 o'clock Monday morning, turn everybody loose. And that wasn't going to happen because of the loss of revenue. It'd be like today saying, okay, these big tractors that they use in these big, huge agricultural conglomerates are terrible. They run on diesel. We're going to get rid of them. Well, what are we going to do to use to farm with? Well, that's your problem. Get electric tractors or something like that. But we're not going to reimburse you for the hundreds of thousands of dollars you have sunk into your farm equipment. You just got to get rid of it Monday morning. Well, they're going out of business. They're going to start. They can't do it. So that was the same thing back then. And then the other thing that happened, another thing that they never mentioned that they bring up was the Corwin Amendment, C-O-R-W-I-N. Was a representative from Ohio that had an amendment passed in the United States Congress, not the Confederate Congress, in the United States Congress, that would make slavery legal in the Constitution, which meant to get rid of slavery, you would have to have a constitutional amendment to get rid of it, which would be very, very difficult to do. And so that was their idea. They erroneously believe that the South had left because of slavery, and so if we get this amendment passed to the Constitution, which it passed, the United States Senate, if we get it passed, then these seven states that have left will come back in. Well, that wasn't the point. They could pass all the slavery amendments they wanted to in the U.S. Constitution. We weren't coming back in no matter what they did. And so they had it passed the United States Congress. Lincoln said he would sign it. And they had four states that were still in the Union in the North, not in the border states like Tennessee, Arkansas, North Carolina, and Virginia across there. There were four legitimate northern states that signed off on it. So if the seven southern states had come back in and signed off on it, and they picked up a few more from up north, slavery would have been in the United States Constitution. But the South said, no, thank you. That's not why we left. That's not why we're coming back in. So that's another piece of history that they very conveniently jump over when they're trashing the South and talking about how rotten the South was. And all they did was sit around on the veranda sipping their mint julep with one hand and beating the slaves with the other hand. That's the what they want in the history books, and that's the image of the South that they want portrayed. So, you know,
at one point you made too, Lee, Gene, was yes, those nutcases that, you know, they wanted to start, come hell or high water. It wasn't because they gave a damn about the blacks, the slaves, it's because they hated the South so much. And you know something else? Those people are still in control today. They still hate us today. It's the same people that hate the Germans, that hate the white Russians. It's the same damn people. And they'll never stop hating us, will they, Gene?
No, never will. Never will. And we can have these suck-up politicians that crawl on their hands and knees and, oh, we're so sorry. Oh, I come from such a terrible part of the country. Oh, I'm so ashamed. They don't care. You know, you can crawl on your knees till your trousers are worn out in the knees. They don't care. If you pander to them, they come back next week and expect even more pandering and more sucking up and more kiss of their posterior or whatever. So that's it. That's what they want.
Well, Mr. Gene, Mr. Bitter Interest, he's got that music coming. Going to our last break. We'll be right back, folks, after this break.
Attorney Jason Robb, General Counsel of the Knights Party, based out of Harrison, Arkansas, and proud supporter of Blood River Radio. I, like you, am concerned about the destruction of our beloved America and our racial kindred people and our cherished liberties. As an individual and as a nation, liberty is what we seek. Liberty is important. It is what allows us to be independent, and if properly used, liberty allows us to fully worship God in all areas of life. And with that worship comes more liberty. We are on the verge of anarchy in this country, and personal liberty is looked upon as a crowning achievement of the people. However, Christianity and white law and order is viewed as the enemy of this newfound freedom, and that is why it is under attack. Learn more by listening to Blood River Radio every Saturday from 4 to 6 p.m.
During our war for Southern independence, the brilliant Confederate general Robert E. Lee foretold the decline of this country when he prophesied, if those people, referring to the dictatorial federal government, if those people win this war, the United States will become a bully abroad and a tyrant at home. As Lee predicted, it has come to pass. The principles laid out in our founding documents, our Declaration of Independence, and the individual rights protected in our Constitution have been vilified and discarded. But not everyone has surrendered. Blood River Radio brings you highly respected, intelligent guests not afraid to speak the truth when the truth in America today is censored and attacked. Your contributions keep us on the air in order to fight against the bullies abroad and the tyrants at home. Send your war contributions to Blood River Radio, P.O. Box 34636, Bartlett, Tennessee, 38184. That address is on our website, www.bloodriverradio.com. Don't let the bullies and the tyrants win.
The Blood River Radio family, I would like to thank you, supporters, one more time for keeping us on the air. It's been an amazing journey. We're coming up on 5 years, and I told Sam once I didn't think we had enough money to go for 1 year. I said there's nothing we need to say we couldn't say in 1 year. 1 year went to 2 years went to 3. Now we're at 5. But I'm just saying, all of you people out there that donate, you're the ones that do it. I couldn't do it in the beginning. I don't want this to be a rabbit trail, but in the beginning, it was me, Matt Goodwin, and Lee Cochran. We sold gold in the beginning to get the program going, to get the airtime, get the equipment. And but after that, you know, it's tough, and we don't always make that great of money. But I'd just like to say thank you again. Thank you so very much for the people who do support this program. And with that, I mean, that's how we can have excellent people like the staff we have on here, like the fellow we're getting ready to go back to right now, the bitter ender, the Vietnam Marine combat. He's been there up and close and personal, if you know what I mean. We're going to go right back to that great gentleman, my brother. And I don't respect anybody more than I do that man. Go ahead, Brother Gene.
Well, thank you, Eddie. Appreciate that.
Yes, sir.
I don't know how great my combat record was. I fired a lot of the Marine Corps' ammunition at the North Vietnamese. I don't know if I hit any of them, but I burned up a lot of the Marine Corps' ammunition. Anyway.
Well, you know what I heard, Gene?
No.
There was this news guy interviewing a line officer, infantry officer. They've been talking about something about a minefield. And the dumbass newsman said, well, I heard that it wasn't a very big minefield. And their combat infantry officer said, sir, he said, have you ever been at a minefield? He said, a minefield with one mine in it is a big minefield.
It is. It's dangerous. Yeah.
But anyway, that's one of my...
I was actually in the engineers. And when you put in a minefield, you chart it exactly off a compass reading and how far they are apart from north to south, east to west, that sort of thing. So if you ever had to go back in there again and take it out, you know exactly where they are. Because it can be as dangerous to the people that put it in as it is to the enemy trying to come through.
Yes.
So that's something that you know, you really had to be careful with. And even on our side, they would have a barbed wire fence, and they would have a triangular sign on it that had a skull and crossbones that said mines. Own people wouldn't cross that fence and go out into that thing right there. So they
I've
got
to ask
dangerous.
One more question, Gene, to you.
Fire away.
Did you have any affirmative action compass readers that went through the compass reading class that's got promoted with affirmative action? And,
no. Thank goodness the Marine Corps hadn't sunk that low yet. Now, I've heard some things from the Marine Corps recently that just makes me disgusted and almost embarrassed that I was ever in work for the federal government for 3 years, but I did. But no, the people we had, my commanding officer, Colonel R.C. Evans, he's from Hohenwald, Tennessee. And
oh, wow.
When I reported in, he was asking, tell me what unit they were going to assign me to and, where I was going to pick up my equipment and all that stuff. And he said, by the way, Lieutenant, where are you from? I said, sir, I'm from Nashville, Tennessee. And he goes, Nashville? I'm from Hohenwald. And he grabbed my hand, started shaking my hand like his long-lost nephew had just shown up or something. I would see him around on the base there, and you could salute on base, but not out in the field. Because you didn't want snipers picking off the officers. So I'd salute him, and he'd say, well, Lieutenant Andrews, how's everything going for you? I said, well, fine, sir, fine. I said, well, you need anything, you come see me. Now, he's a lieutenant colonel, and I was a second lieutenant. And he goes, you need anything, you come see me, because us Tennessee boys got to stick together. And he'd say, how are those Tennessee Vols going to do this fall? We're going to get in the bowl game? And I said, well, I hope so, sir. Oh, let's go Big Orange. And he'd salute and head on off there. Great, great individual. But that's the type of leadership we had back then. So
too bad that's gone, huh, Gene?
It is gone. Now, one thing that we wanted to go back to, and we were talking about Monica and the VOPO, the East German secret police, coming to see her and checking on up her and see if she was not following the party line. A point I've made in some of these debates, and the let's call them minority historians that are always taking the other side and can only yap about slavery, they get upset when I make this comparison. I said, you know, you talk about a terrible dictatorship. Lincoln had a horrible dictatorship. Now, you look at East Germany, the East German communist dictatorship from 1945 until the Berlin Wall came down in 1989, 44 years. They killed over 18,000 of their own people, not because they were rising up in revolt and trying to overthrow the East communist government. They were just trying to get away and live in a free, democratic country of their own choice. And so who was worse, the East communist German police that would shoot these people that got hung up in the wire trying to get out of East Germany, or they would shoot these people in the wire and leave them hanging there, not to shoot them to kill them, but let them bleed out? Or you're talking about minefields. They stepped on a mine, and they were laying out between East Germany and West Germany. They would leave them there. And even if their friends tried to get out there and rescue them, they would shoot their friends coming over from West Germany. So that was a horrible, horrible dictatorship. Lincoln's dictatorship was even worse, because in 44 years, the East Germans killed 18,000 of their people. The Lincoln dictatorship, in only 4 years, killed over 290,000 of their own people, and you throw in the civilians, it was probably close to or over 300,000, not because those people were rising up in revolt trying to overthrow the Lincoln dictatorship, but because those people in the South were simply trying to leave and live in a country of their own choice. So you tell me then, who was worse, the East German communist dictatorship that killed 18,000 in 44 years, or the Lincoln dictatorship that killed close to 300,000 in only 4 years? So if you're looking at the numbers, that's a pretty brutal comparison right there between two dictatorial governments. And, you know, it seems like we're falling back into that today, where we have a government that uses their Department of Justice and their so-called National Police Force, the FBI, to go after their political opponents. And this is what a third world banana republic does. And we have fallen into that, and I don't see how in the world we're going to get out of it, really. I am really nervous about this election coming up in 2024. The Democrats have gotten so good at stealing a national election. And we always made jokes about Chicago and Mayor Daley and
I remember those days.
Syndicate they ran up there, and, you know, about the guy that was talking about, well, my grandfather lived in Chicago, and he voted Republican all his life until he died, and then he started voting Democrat. And, you know, that's basically what we've got going on today, when you can bring in all these paper ballots and stuff the ballot box. And then you have somebody that says, wait a minute, there are so many instances of fraud and voting irregularities. We want to have this thing checked out. We think the election was stolen in several states. And because you bring that up, now how many people have they charged in Georgia? Wasn't it 18 or 19 people besides President Trump? Yeah.
And in Michigan, they're they're going to, I think those people are looking for 5 to 10 years in federal penitentiary for, we talked about this earlier, for what they call, and this is exactly what the Democrats used, their verbiage. They said they're convicted, and the law they broke was uttering and publishing. You know, they uttered the statement you just made. They said, well, we suspect, you know, we're not saying we need to create violence against anybody, but we're thinking this election is looking mighty suspicious. We have a lot of facts on our side that says it was, it looks like it was really stolen. So we're going to investigate, and we're going to get, well, we don't trust the election. Well, we think we're screwed. So we're going to get some new electors, because they did that. And I guess because they signed the papers to get the electors up there, so they were guilty of uttering or of a speech crime, and they're guilty of writing, putting that in the speech crime in writing. You're so right, Gene. You come up with some of the. I don't think I know anybody that comes up with this good analogies as you do.
What's going on. It's a horrible system that we're existing under. And I'm sure Dr. Hill and everyone in the legal South will agree it can't be changed. We have to get out of it, and that's the only hope I see, that someday we can withdraw from this. Of course, they're not going to let us. They will.
No.
And I've said this over and over again: the only way the South or any other states can get out is for an economic collapse of the federal dictatorship, just like. In Eastern Europe, when the Soviet Union collapsed, they didn't have the money to pay the soldiers to go into Hungary or Romania, Bulgaria, Czechoslovakia, East Germany, and force these countries to stay in the Soviet Union. The soldiers said, "We're not going to get shot for nothing, you know, blank you and the horse you rode in on. We're not doing that." I don't know how you say that in Russian, but that's pretty much the gist of what they told them. No way, comrade. So I can foresee that as being a possibility in this country, and it'd be rough, you know, with the economic system of this country to collapse. But the end result would be we get rid of the dictatorship in Washington, or have it pushed off to the Northeast. They love that. Let them have it, and we go our own way. And I've heard people out in Texas say they're talking about Texas. Like Brexit, like England getting out of Great Britain getting out of the European Union. Now they're talking about Texas and Texas getting out. And the Republic, because Texas has always held on to their status as a republic. And in Texas, it's illegal to fly the Texas flag and the United States flag at the same height. They don't see that as anything wrong with that. Because they claim they still have their republic status. So you look at Texas, and they've got all the oil and natural gas they need. They got warm water ports that never freeze.
Agriculture.
They got beef cattle.
Cattle.
They got the cattle. They can feed themselves. So the United States needs Texas a lot more than Texas needs the United States.
Got that right.
So, and I guarantee you, if they got out of the evil empire, that border wall would go up so fast. And it'd be so high.
Yes, it would.
I mean, a mosquito couldn't get through there. So it's something to look at. You know, what would we be like if we could get our own country back? So,
Gene, you mentioned an interesting point about
those are some thoughts for our listeners to munch on till next week and see what their opinion is and where they think we need to go. But I've used that comparison. Lincoln and the East Germans a lot of times, they don't like that.
I love that analogy. Also, I'm trying to get to cram this in before we're gone. If you want to talk about the flags flying at equal height, if you go over to the Cooper Yeshiva Jewish school here in Memphis, you'll see the so-called American flag and the Israeli Star of David flying at the exact same height. People, thank you so much for tuning in tonight, all the Blood River Radio audience. Thank you, Sam, for running the board greatly. Thank you, Gene. Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Nancy. Thank you, Rand. Thank you, Blood River Radio audience. So we'll see you same time next week, God willing. Good night, everybody, and happy Labor Day.